Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Hello and welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast, episode 54. It has been a little while since we last spoke to you. A few things have happened. I am Kevin. Join with me as always, my podcast friend and partner, Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm better than I was about a month ago. So if you you can kind of notice that we've taken a bit of a break, and that break is pretty symbolic of us not winning the national championship. It went in a different direction, but that's okay. But we're on episode 54, Kevin. We're back with a vengeance. We're going to have lots to cover today, but let's talk about 54. You know, like we always have done here, 54 is symbolic because it was the number of Matt Kleinman.
Okay.
Who just took a professorship at KU in the School of Architecture. So
that's neat.
Congratulate him if you see him around Lawrence. And also, Dave Johanning was number 54, who is a partial owner of the Sandbar. And they're quite often so. Tell him that he just celebrated the Jayhawk Talk birthday, episode-wise. You know, it's a big accomplishment for him.
I'll be sure to do that.
But otherwise, Kevin, let's just get into this. There's a lot to talk about. Let's just give a little bit of a rundown. Now, I have a feeling, Kevin, this episode is going to be pretty disjointed. We've got a lot of separate weird topics to cover, so we're probably going to cover some of this stuff later on down the road in more detail. But we're just going to do a grab bag of stuff here. We're going to talk about Nadir Tharp. Lots to talk about with Nadir. Miles Turner. Do a little season recap because we haven't done that yet. Talk about Jake Heaps. Talk a little bit about football. But Kevin, news came out today about our boy, Nadir Tharp. What do you know?
Where were you when you heard about Nadir Tharp's news?
I was sitting at my desk, and I received a text message from Statboy.
That's pretty good.
It said, WTD, Nadir. Obviously, that was a mistype. It was supposed to be WTF, but it was typed WTD, Nadir. And I said, "What? Did you do something stupid again? Is there another picture out?" But no, I quickly searched Twitter and found out that he was transferring. Kevin, where were you?
I was on a conference call. I kept getting beeps in my ear, which were Twitter notifications and texts and sounds and everything. And finally stopped listening to the conference call and looked at my phone and saw the first thing that had popped up. Someone had tweeted me something, said derp. And I was like, well, what does that mean?
You know, something's gone wrong when someone just says to you, derp.
Derp. That's all
something
it says.
Something is incredibly wrong.
And so then I was like, oh, crap, what happened? And then sure enough, found out Jeff Goodman was the first to tweet it out. A friend of the podcast, Jeff Goodman, who on this podcast, by the way, told us he's a big fan of Nadir Tharp and has known him for a long time. So perhaps he had a little family lead there. To beat everyone else to the punch with the breaking story that Nadir Tharp is transferring. So let's get right to this, Andrew. He's a starting point guard for a team that's won a Big 12 title. He had 8.5 points per game, 5 assists per game. The only senior returning next year of note. Our senior night is going to be one Christian Garrett, and that is all. So
it'll be an epic senior night.
Yes, it will. But epic. Let's talk about, I guess, right off the bat, let's talk about the statement that the university released. And it said something like, Nadir wants to be close to his daughter who's had some problems. She's healthy now, but wants to be closer to her in Massachusetts. And Self comes out and says, you know, hey, we appreciate what he's done here and sad to see him go and whatever else. And we're not going to be, you know, I don't know, not to speculate about what really is going on, but we might as well speculate about what really went on because we can do that here on a podcast. So
we're going to.
Let's talk about the photo, first of all, because we haven't been on since the photo. Of course, we're talking about the selfie thing that had him and the older lady naked on top of him. Tell me about the photo. It's been a while.
You want to describe it to you?
Well, I don't know. You know, do.
Well, where were you, Kevin, when you first saw the Nadir Tharp photo? Let's do a little speculating here because we haven't really seen this or heard about this, you know, briefly on talk radio. But where do you think that picture was taken? We didn't ever come to a conclusion on that, did we? I've seen Boom Boom Room. I've seen Topeka. I've seen the towers.
Yes.
Where was this taken?
Most places in Topeka sort of look like the towers, so I can see that. But I think it's the towers. It looks like that was taken in the privacy of one's own dorm room / apartment. I think the real speculation is how'd it get out. And again, who knows? But if I'm guessing, and that's what we're going to do here, he texted it out to like some of his buddies, you know, hey, look what I'm doing type of thing. And one of those buddies maybe passed it along to another buddy. And next thing you know, it's on the internet. Does that sound about right?
That's how these things usually happen. And,
right.
And, you know, probably something like that. Or someone who was sitting there happened to take it, who, you know, didn't need to be sitting there and didn't need to be taking that picture. But the real question is does any of this off the field or off the court stuff have anything to do with this decision today? Do you think on part of either party, you know, maybe the backlash that Nadir got?
Are you talking about the female?
Which no.
party? He's like, what? I mean,
between Bill Self and Nadir.
I think it definitely plays a role. But not like the main part of it. I think there's probably lots of things going on here, and all of it together has led to this decision to transfer. And you know, it's off the court stuff. It's him being suspended last year for a couple games for playing in that summer game. It's him making bad decisions on the court and off the court. You know, this one, self-called extremely embarrassing and unbecoming and all those words that he said he would handle internally. Well, you got to wonder whether all of this just kind of added up to being one of those things where Self might have said something to the effect of, hey, the point guard position is wide open next year, you know, or something like that. And maybe it just added up finally where Nadir decided to make a change. What about you? What do you think?
You know, I think it's everything combined. I think mm-hmm. that if things go a little bit differently on the court, things don't happen off the court, and everything is kind of thrown into this decision calculus, a different decision is made, and he's back for his senior year. So I think that, you know, but I think that his daughter probably had a lot to do with it, but I think that it's, you got to take everything into account, and this is where we ended up.
Here's a question. Had KU made a Final Four this last year and Nadir played well and whatever else, do you think none of this happens and he's back for his senior year?
Yes.
Yeah. See, that's what makes you wonder whether it's off the court or on the court. And I think that really just tells you it's both. You and I were talking about this at one point, and we were kind of worried that Nadir, as a returning senior, may be one of the first guys in a long time to get booed a lot at KU, like on the home court.
And that, because that would be unfortunate.
I know.
That may be a possibility. And I don't envision KU fans doing that, but if it was going to happen, it was going to happen with Nadir. And it shouldn't be the case because he has been a good player, just with some spotty moments.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about kind of the significance of this historically, at least in the past 10, 12 years. Other than the, you know, the Mario Chalmers taking over for Jeff Hawkins in the 2005-06 season, will this be the first time that a underclassman point guard will be running the team since Aaron Miles?
Was Russell... He ran it pretty early, didn't he?
Well, he was part of that same, because he was a year older than Mario. So other than that little, you know, transition there.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
it'll be Mason as a sophomore or Frank Camp as a sophomore, or if Graham comes in, him as a freshman, you know, this will be one of the younger backcourts that we've ever had.
Definitely.
You know, from the starting position.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of the next question is, so who's going to be the guy, or is it going to be a combination of guys? I mean, for what everybody says about Tharp, he was a pretty darn good offensive player. He, you know, was a pretty solid in on advanced stats and offensive ratings and things like that. Had a pretty good assist to turnover ratio in Big 12 play, even though people don't really want to talk about that. I think he was fourth in the Big 12. But one of the biggest questions about him is his defense. And so, which was pretty bad. I think that's, there's no really any reason to sugarcoat it. He was not a very good defender. So you're looking at Connor, Mason, and potentially Graham, and we'll talk about Graham a little later. So let's focus on Connor and Mason. Who is your early prediction for the starting point guard for the 2014-15 Kansas Jayhawks?
I would say it is Frank Mason, but Connor Frankham's not far behind.
Really? Interesting.
Well, what do you say?
See, I'm on the other side. I think Connor. But yeah, I think that will be interesting. I'm not, the only reason I say Connor, I thought you were going to say Connor. So this is, I want to hear your justification for Mason.
Well, I mean, he's more of an all around player. I think he got better defense at the end. He's a little quicker. He doesn't have the shot, but he's more of the prototypical, you know, going forward point guard that Bill Self likes. He can get to the hole. We saw him get to the hole better than anybody, this year. Just wasn't very good at putting the ball in the basket once he got there. And that's the kind of point guard that Bill Self likes to run out there. So that's why I would have Mason with the early lead. But, you know, Frankamp played really well in the tournament, as we try to remember back to the tournament. You know, the small and few bright, shiny spots that there were.
Yeah,
we can't forget that. But I would say that, you know, in terms of skill, in terms of what Bill Self's looking for, Frank Mason seems to fit that bill better.
Man, I don't know. I disagree, I guess, because I and this will probably be a thing we talk about all offseason, which will be fun. But I think Connor, when you say things that he's looking for, what we saw from Connor was not turning it over and playing smart and taking good shots and making smart passes and playing passable defense. And I think the defense side, you might be right. I think Mason might be a little better. Just the reason we saw Connor get expanded minutes more and more throughout the end of the season kind of shows me that perhaps he's going to be the guy. So I don't know. We'll see. It will definitely be interesting. I do want to ask you, though, Andrew, what is your favorite Nadir Tharp moment? How will you remember Nadir Tharp going forward? Do you have any moments that stick out?
You know, everybody should put this number one on their list. Obviously, it's him doing the robot Harlem Shake video.
That's it.
Right? But, I mean, he's had some hot spots on the floor, too.
No, I agree.
They're tough to remember in terms of, like, one specific thing. But, you know, he was a good player. We especially at the beginning of the year, and then sort of faded in the middle and the end. But, I mean, wasn't he a National Player of the Week?
Yep.
At least one point during the
early
season.
On.
So, I mean, he had some great games in early Big 12 play. So, I mean, he is a elite type of player. Just really kind of fell apart for him down the stretch.
Yeah, when he was on, he was good. I mean, he was truly, you know, a KU caliber starting point guard. The problem was he was just so inconsistent, and then his defense wasn't very good. So, I don't know. His good minutes were great. His bad minutes were really bad, and it'll be kind of sad that he will be remembered mostly for not playing well in the postseason and the offseason off the court stuff, because he actually did have some good minutes as a Jayhawk. But anyway, we'll catch you later, Nadir. Good luck to you wherever you end up. We'll certainly be watching. He'll probably go on and be like some National Player of the Year candidate in some middle conference and put up 25 points a game or something just to be a real Nadir.
I hope he does. I do too.
Let's talk about some recruiting stuff, because we've had several things develop here in the past week. First, let's touch on Miles Turner. He, of course, was the last big chip to fall. Chose Texas yesterday over Kansas. And the most important question I have to you, Andrew, does a bucket hat count as a hat ceremony?
You know, I think my opinion is a guy who wears a bucket hat is not a guy we really want on our team.
Mm.
You know, if he's going to make that decision, he's probably going to make some other poor decisions. So, I mean, bucket hats were That was the coolest thing in 1997.
Yeah, it was.
Monster was probably born in 1997 or close to that. So maybe he's going back to his roots. But, you know, when I heard there was going to be hats, I didn't know if the Cliff Alexander streak had, or the curse of the hat ceremony had been broken with Cliff Alexander. But I think it counts. But I don't think we're cursed from the hats. I don't like the hats, Kevin. But
no, go ahead.
We didn't get him, so maybe that's just my bias here.
Now, the bucket hat does not count as a hat ceremony. That's the answer to this riddle. It does not count. It's a bucket hat. If you'd have put a cowboy hat on, we'd still be talking about the same thing. Does a cowboy hat count? No, it doesn't. It has to be a flat bill, and it has to be put on your head, along with other flat bills on the table, and that did not happen. So the good news is we're still not cursed. I do believe that Cliff Alexander has broken that curse. When was the last time, Andrew, you wore a bucket hat?
Oh, man, it was middle school, I think.
Yeah.
Was it last week for you?
No, I actually do have a bucket hat like that I could go get right now. I know exactly where it is, but it's for like golf. I'm super pale and I get sunburned easily, so sometimes I wear a bucket hat.
Okay, well, it's more of a function thing.
It is a function thing for me. Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, let's move on from the hats. But the good news is we're still good to go. Don't fear the hats. So he goes to Texas to an already loaded front court, including Cameron Ridley, Jonathan Holmes. There's a chance he comes off the bench for that team. It'll be interesting. That's obviously a loaded front court. I think Texas, more importantly, needs shooters than big men, but they are certainly loaded in that department. Are you upset that we missed on him?
I mean, I'm not upset, but I think it would have been more of like a frosting for this team. Not necessarily something we absolutely needed, but would certainly, you never turn down a top five player. Never, I mean, no matter what our situation is, you always take that player. And, you know, it kind of sets up Texas as our, you know, primary rival next year, our primary threat for the Big 12. I think it's going to be a pretty good race between those two teams and pretty evenly matched both down low, you know, and some guys coming back on the perimeter, you know, with Seldon and Feliz coming back for Texas. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys and a lot of history between those teams and a lot of new energy. So Texas and Kansas, just like the late 2000s era, the rivalry's back, I think.
I think you're right. I did see the aforementioned Jeff Goodman has Texas one spot ahead of KU in his latest ranking. So maybe that's his new troll job for KU fans this year, just to
always got to be something.
Just to always got to be something. So anyway, that's kind of funny. Well, let's move on to Devontae Graham, who is also a guy that KU is looking at. Now we have two scholarships, Andrew, with the departure of Nadir Tharp. So Devontae Graham, a little bio here for those maybe that don't know a lot about him. He's really come on late. He committed to Appalachian State out of high school and then grew quite a bit his senior year, started getting some rankings love, and asked out of his commitment to Appalachian State. I didn't know this, but I found this out today. Appalachian State actually accused NC State of tampering. Did you know this with him? Nothing came of that, but kind of interesting, especially since NC State is now in the running for him. He never enrolled to Appalachian State, ended up going to Brewster Academy. And in the interim, the Appalachian State head coach was fired and the new coach let him out of his letter of intent. He visited KU, Virginia, and NC State this last week. And just earlier this week, he's now down to KU and the hometown NC State. So it's kind of interesting to see this guy. What are your thoughts on Devontae Graham?
You know, he's kind of following the footsteps of Nadir Tharp, in a sense that he first committed to kind of a low major school. In this case, Devontae Graham committed to Appalachian State. In Nadir's case, he committed to Towson. They're both coming from Brewster. They're both point guards. Devontae Graham's a little smaller and, you know, maybe ranked a little higher than Nadir was coming out of his prep years. But from all indications, he seems to be one of those guys who got good, or finally people started noticing him late. I think he could be a good player for us with, you know, and compete with the other two point guards on the roster. I think it's an easier decision for him to make. Not that it wasn't easy to begin with Nadir's minutes not being there. So if he comes and he commits, he's going to have to play minutes next year. I mean, just out of necessity.
Yeah, he might. And I'll correct you before you get hate mail. You meant Frank Mason, not Nadir Tharp on the Towson thing. But I know what you mean. You said Nadir, but you meant Frank Mason.
That's right.
Just so you don't get hate mail.
Similar. Yeah, well, I'll get an email. It's just similar to KU point guards generally and how they've kind of come up. You know, but shorter point guards.
Nadir was like Marquette, right?
Right.
So there, you can kind
of
say
that. Or one of those, yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm with you. I do think it will be interesting. Certainly a guy who's risen up the rankings pretty quickly. And I always love watching KU fans on message boards and things. And it's like this everywhere. But, you hear, okay, well, Bill Self is interested in Devontae Graham. And you look at the rankings and you can't find him anywhere. He's like unranked. And people are like, he's not a KU type player. I wouldn't recruit that guy. I don't know, you know, maybe just filling out the roster, kind of a Tyrone Appleton type. And then the new rankings come out and he's moved up to a 4-star and he's number 36 in Rivals. And everyone's like, oh, you know, he's a KU caliber player. And so it's kind of funny. But anyway, the recent Rivals rankings moved him up to number 36. Off the record, I've heard that Self really, really likes him as a point guard, comparing him to some of the best guys in this class, not named Moutier, including in the conversation with Tyus Jones and UK's Ulis. So it will be interesting to see what happens here. I think that KU's in a good spot, obviously, with the departure of Nadir. There are some minutes here. The same situation, although, is kind of at the same at NC State, who returns only Cat Barber at the point guard position, who was a one-time KU recruit as well. You might remember that name. I do have one other question, though. Do you think the release of Tharp hurts or helps our chances for Devontae Graham, because they both went to Brewster? Supposedly they were tight. Another little wrinkle in the fold.
I think it helps. I'm not sure what, you know, tight means between guys who are several years apart in school, didn't spend a lot of time with each other in school. Yeah, sure, they could be tight, but I think that realistically, you come to KU to play a lot of basketball minutes, and a lot of minutes just opened up. So I think it certainly helps getting him here.
I think I'm with you. Well, let's move on from recruiting. We will certainly wait and see what happens with Devontae Graham and potentially somebody else on that last scholarship, which is now open. Who knows if it'll be filled or not? My guess is that it won't be, because there isn't much left, but you never know. Something could open up. Someone might be left out of their letter of intent, and we will see. Let's talk, Andrew, about a little Andrew Wiggins and Joel Embiid. What do you say?
Let's do that.
Okay.
I'm sad. You just made me sad. Well, we knew Wiggins was going to go.
Right.
Right? That was part of the deal, part of the package. There wasn't even that little hint of doubt that, you know, maybe he'll come back. But let's talk about him generally. What's his legacy going to be as a Jayhawk? You know, is he really going to be like this memorable guy based on this season? Or is our affections for him, which I think are very high, going to be whether he turns into like a LeBron James?
Yeah.
Like if he turns into, say, a guy who gets a couple All-Stars, or maybe if he doesn't, what's our affections going to be for him 10 years from now?
I was just going to say, I think there's two answers to this. The first one is it depends who you ask, because a lot of people want to say that he didn't live up to expectations as a Jayhawk. They didn't make it out of the first weekend in the tournament. But if the people that are paying attention and they really know basketball are going to say, man, he was awesome. I'm really glad he was here for that 1 year, because we're not going to see someone quite like him probably in a very, very long time. And then I think you're right. I think the second part of that is what he becomes in the league. Because if he goes on to become, you know, a perennial all-star, I think people's opinions will change and say, oh, man, always a Jayhawk. You know, we got that guy who was here that 1 year, but man, he was awesome. And look what he's done now. And we'll claim him a little harder. But I don't know. That's just my opinion. What about you?
You know, I think so, too. I mean, he would have scored 17 points per game for us, you know, on a Big 12 championship team. Didn't have the success we wanted in the tournament, but, you know, he was fun to watch this season.
Yeah.
And I think that if we remember that, you know, there's going to be a lot of highlights shown on the Jumbotron, on the pregame videos of him for years to come. And, you know, that's exciting. And, you know, he got second team All-American. Is that enough for him to get up in the...
I don't think so.
Is his jersey retired?
I don't think so. But if, like I said, if he goes on and goes to, you know, 10 All-Star games, he will hang in the rafters, because you want recruits to walk in and see that he was there one way or the other. They'll find a way to get him up there if he ends up being an All-Star.
I think so, too. So Mr. Wiggins, thank you for spending 10 months in Lawrence, Kansas. I see you're now hanging out with Drake at the Raptors games, which, you know, good on you for doing that.
Yep.
Get yourself ready for the NBA. But, Kevin, let's move on and talk about our other friend, Joel Embiid, who also committed to the NBA. Now, this was not as clear-cut, Kevin.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
There was this little thing in the back of everyone's head, you know, with the injury, with the way things happened, with, you know, he wasn't expected to be a one-and-done. He really came on, you know, at the beginning of the season. And then kind of, you know, leveled off a little bit and then got hurt. So, I mean, it wasn't a slam dunk that he would go. What did you ever think that he would come back?
I put the odds at like 90% he was gone. And I got a lot of kickback or pushback from people on that. Part of the reason I said that was I really did think he was gone. Like, really did. Because all the cards about, you know, him being a top five pick and, you know, with the back issue, if he comes back and struggles, then does he turn into a, you know, just a first round pick instead of a top five pick? I think everything kind of pointed to he needed to go. He's going to get probably a top five pick, has all the same ceiling that he had before. If he comes back and struggles for any reason, that goes down. And we've seen, you know, even recently what it looks like if you come back, especially some big guys, and you struggle, what, you know, how much money you're giving up. And then, of course, when Woj came out and said he had sources saying he was going, and then it didn't happen for another week or 10 days or whatever, like, he was gone. Like, the second I saw Woj say that, he's gone. Like, he doesn't get those things wrong. And I thought it was kind of interesting, some KU fans getting all mad at Woj for reporting that, but it's just his job, man, and he was right from the beginning. I think he was right. So it is sad, because there was a chance he could come back, and I think KU would be really, really, really good with him back, but I still think they're going to be good next year. What about you?
Yeah, I think so too. I was a little disappointed. There's that little thing in the back of my head that, you know what, he's coming back. This is going to be a monster season for him next year. You know, player of the year. It's all done. It's all set in stone. He just makes that one decision, but can't fault him for what he did. I think he's going to be a pretty good NBA player, really good NBA player. And I just hope he doesn't end up in Milwaukee, but any of those other teams up there, I think he can do pretty well on.
I will say this. I think he, if you asked him what he wanted to do on the inside in his big old heart, he would have said he wanted to come back. But he couldn't. I mean, that's just the answer. I mean, you just can't. With what the kind of money that's out there, setting yourself up. And I know he's somewhat well off with his parents or whatever, but that was the right decision. And I think he did it right. Whoever advised him made the right call, and I can't fault him for that. You said Milwaukee. What teams do you want these guys to go to? I mean, in a perfect world, who are you kind of hoping they fall with?
I hope, I'd say Andrew Wiggins to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And Joel Embiid to Boston. LA.
Oh, I thought you were
going to say Lakers. Or LA, yeah. Either one of those. Yeah.
Either one of those would be good. I agree. Well, I do want to touch on one thing before we move on here. I've heard quite a bit and seen on Twitter, and I'm sure you have too, and everyone else has probably either felt this or heard someone talk about how they want, you know, after this one and done year where two guys went one and done, and we've had obviously McLemore who went, you know, sort of one and done, and tracing back a little bit, they want to see Self maybe move away from recruiting those guys and try to get some continuity, have 3 and 4 year guys, and maybe move away from the one and done type players. What are your thoughts on that statement, just generally?
I think you got to go for the best players available. Even thinking they're one and done, you don't say, we're only going to recruit, you know, after, you know, the 10th ranked and up because, you know, we don't want one and dones. I think you have to go after the best available. That's going to be the best chance for success. Now, you can go after some of those other guys too, guys you think that are 2-3-4 year guys, but you don't pass up a Miles Turner. You don't pass up an Andrew Wiggins. You don't pass up a Joel Embiid. You know, and if they are a one and done, that means that they've had a successful enough season that likely they've benefited the team quite significantly. So you don't turn them down. Go after the best guys. And when you're Kansas and you can get the best guys, it can always be in the running for them. You don't ever turn that down.
Yeah, I think you're right. In fact, I know you're right. There's no discussion on this for me. I basically, you know, the reason these guys get paid so much, the Calipari's, the Krzyzewski's, the Selfs, is because they are in the running for these guys every year. And if they weren't, they wouldn't be there. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, you look around the top programs in the country, they're not teams that are relying on three-star guys. I mean, you can look at someone like a team like Wisconsin, for instance. There are some that can do that. And Florida this year had a pretty good year with some guys that maybe stuck around. But by and large, you got to have good players to win. And, you know, especially in the tournament, we've seen where if you have a good team, that's one thing. But if you have pros, that can really get you through. And we will continue to recruit pros because those are the guys, first of all, that fill the seats. The big money people like having the Wiggins in town. How many seats and how much coverage and how many T-shirts do you think Andrew Wiggins sold this year? Just think about that. I mean, there's more to it than just putting together a team. And if Self didn't go after those guys, he would be committing coaching malpractice because you just have to do it. And especially if you can get them. So I don't think there's much of an argument there. But anyway, I just wanted to see what your thought is on that. It kind of bugs me when people say that.
You know, and speaking of Andrew Wiggins' T-shirt, and this will come back around. Mm. Let's go ahead and do our 2013-2014 basketball season review.
Ugh.
We were 25-10, 14-4 in the Big 12, with the Big 12 title, lost in the Big 12 tournament. But before we begin, I just want to say and apologize to all of Jayhawk Nation that it is my fault that we lost to Stanford.
It is, why? It's
because I did everything that I shouldn't have done that jinxed the team. So, as some people may have known, and we go out to Vegas every year for the first weekend. We also were there in 2010 for Northern Iowa. You were there for that.
I was.
And that was maybe the worst experience of our lives.
Maybe.
Walking through the casino afterwards. I think that was the worst experience of my life.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal.
Okay, so we watched the Northern Iowa game in a hotel ballroom, and I was wearing a Cole Aldrich jersey shirt. And that was the last time that I had worn a jersey shirt or even purchased a jersey shirt, right? So this season, this year, I went to the Rally House or the Kansas Sampler, and I bought myself an Andrew Wiggins jersey shirt for Las Vegas. I thought it was one of those script ones.
Mm-hmm.
Looked real nice. And I figured, you know what? Last time I bought one of these, we lost in the second round. Maybe I shouldn't do this. But I did it anyway, Kevin.
Hmm.
I did it anyway. So we get to Sunday morning. We're trying to figure out where we're going to watch the game. We go to a casino ballroom. So I have two strikes going up against me here. I'm wearing the jersey shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a similar jersey shirt that I wore in 2010. We're watching in a casino ballroom. So I have two strikes against us of bad karma. And what do you know? We end up losing this game. So I just want to say to everyone out there,
it's your fault.
This is my fault.
Your fault.
And I take the blame for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we did leave at halftime, which you and I were also watching somewhere in Vegas the last time, last year when we were playing North Carolina, and we were losing and we left where we were. And then we came back and won. So I think we at least did the right thing. We left the ballroom at halftime to go somewhere else.
Yeah, it's too late to fix, though.
Might have been too late. You sat there and watched it at a bar. I went up to my hotel room because I couldn't be around people watching the end of that game. And I just threw stuff in my hotel room as I was watching the end of it by myself in a hotel room. That's how I watched the end of the Stanford game. Anyway, let's not talk about that. let's move on from that. Let's talk about the season as a whole. You know, like you said, it's a 10th straight Big 12 title, advanced to the semifinals in the Big 12 tourney, lost to ISU. We were a 2 seed, lost all 5 starters from last year's team, and still had a pretty good year. Earlier in the season, you and I talked on this podcast about where this team would rank among the 10 Big 12 championship teams. And we had said somewhere in the 5 to 3 range, 4 or 5, 6 range. I can't remember where we ended up, but I think you and I were both hedging our bets, saying, well, there's, you know, the story is yet to be written. Now that the story has been written, where do you think you would rank this team in terms of the 10 teams that have won the Big 12 title in a row?
I think they would have to be probably around 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
Just because the tournament means so much in terms of how we value teams, you know, looking back. You know, this team was a great team, and they accomplished a lot, but that little blemish in the tournament is what everybody's going to remember. It's what I'm going to remember. It's just that heartbreak at the end really means a lot. Now, if they had made the Final Four, if they'd made the Elite Eight, maybe, you know, it's 2 games difference, but, you know, you could theoretically move them up to maybe 3 or 4. But, you know, I think that they're going to be on the lower end in terms of how we look back on them, just because of that small little blemish.
Which sucks, doesn't it? I mean, it's just
Because of injury, like something out of our control. You know, if Embiid's there, I don't know if we win, but we've got, you know, a lot better chance.
We beat Stanford if Embiid's there. No question about it. And that hurt. That was certainly something that we'll look back on, and maybe we'll be forgotten that's why this team didn't make it out of the first weekend, is we were missing a very important player. But no, I'm with you. I think it's probably in that 7-8 range. And like you said, if they win 2 or 3 more games, that makes that much difference. And that's what's got to make it so frustrating for coaches like Bill Self, who can go out and have an 82% win percentage and win more games than anybody in college basketball, but still, you know, not have as much success as others in the tournament, and, you know, maybe not be mentioned in the same breath as some of those because of that. That's got to be frustrating, and it kind of is what it is. I think most fans recognize that it was a good season. I would call it a good season, but not a great season, and not maybe even a season that didn't live up to expectations. I think that you would probably agree with that, wouldn't you?
I think so, but it's tough to say that, like, oh, this was a good season, not a great season, for a team that won the Big 12 by 2 games. You know, we had to take into consideration that there was, you know, a big accomplishment there in doing that. And we get used to it because we always do it, but there's going to come a time where those things aren't going to come as easy. And we're going to really remember back to these days as, you know, being quite special that they always came like this.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, I think the other thing, would you have traded losing the Big 12, you know, regular season title for, you know, like a Final Four run? I think you would, right?
I don't know, maybe.
Oh, you would.
That's a tough question. Probably.
I think everybody would, and that's... I mean, I guess
just getting to the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, good.
Yeah, probably
hanging a Final Four banner versus hanging another Big 12 banner, only because we've had so many of these dang things in a row.
We've got to do. You and I, Kevin's got to lead the charge to get some excitement back into winning the Big 12, because people are getting a little mopey about it, getting a little like, oh, ho hum. It's not a ho hum thing at all. It's a great accomplishment. Only one team can win from the conference, and we just happen to be that team. So by the time next season starts around, we got to get the guns going again for winning these titles.
You know, if any other team would do it, they'd have a parade, and that's just kind of one of those things that Kansas fans. I think you're right. It just and I'm guilty of it too. You know, you win the Big 12, and then you're like, okay, great. Now let's look at the NCAA tournament. Like, that's what matters. And haven't had as much success there, so it's kind of hard to sit back on and say, hey, you know, hey, at least we won the Big 12, right, guys? And
yeah,
especially since we've done it so much, it doesn't seem like it matters as much. We're ready for more NCAA tournament success, and it just hasn't come. And
you know, but there were accomplishments. But what do you think, or what is the most memorable thing that happened this season for you?
Oh man, I don't know. I guess it. I don't have like one specific memory. Like last year, you know, I think my memory would be something like the Iowa State game where, you know, Elijah Johnson went unconscious and had like that big moment. I don't really have like a big moment from this year. Maybe unfortunately the biggest moment that I remember was the Duke game. I mean, the first game of their, like the, you know, third game of the year, where the expectations just went through the roof and it was, holy crap, this team could actually be really, really, really good. And you know, that was a long time ago, but that was probably one of the biggest ones for me. What about you?
I think it would be Embiid in December, just seeing him really pick it up, really figuring it out. Well, late November, in December, into January, like just watching those games, like those 6 weeks, him becoming, going from a guy who, you know, looked like he sort of knew how to play the game to becoming probably one of the best players in Division I basketball. Yeah. Like it was that quick. It was 6 weeks of development, faster than I've seen anyone else, you know, improve. So I think those, like, you know, New Mexico game, you know, a handful of games scattered through there. That's what I'll remember. And Andrew Wiggins dunks.
Yeah.
He was a highlight reel. You know, whatever people say about expectations, I think he more than lived up to expectations.
Me too.
And gave us a lot of excitement. So that's, I think, going to be the things that I'm going to remember most.
I agree. And, you know, Nadir Tharp's picture, like off on the internet, I'll probably remember that, because I will.
Hard to forget, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, that
kind of burns into your retina.
Some things
it?
You can't unsee, and it's still up there. It's actually kind of funny. Today, Nadir Tharp is trending nationally, and so I clicked it. You know, I was like, oh, look, trending nationally, and then Twitter shows up pictures at the top. I'm like, what's the first picture up there? Take a guess.
So everybody gets to relive that all over again.
Yep, pretty good. Well, hey, what do you say we move on from some basketball talk? And you know, it's a little early to talk about football, but we have had the spring game, and we've had some big news here in the last couple of weeks that we want to touch on, and we will continue to touch on throughout the, I guess, what you can call off-season here. We're going to be talking a lot more football. We'll still be talking a lot of basketball, too, but you know, football is kind of coming back into the fold here now that we are approaching spring and into summer. And the big news, Andrew, is that Montel Cozart has been named starting quarterback pretty early for Charlie Weiss to come out and, you know, name somebody right after the spring game. You know, recently in the past few years, we haven't had an official starter. We've had one in name. We knew it was going to be Dane Crist. You know, it was pretty obvious it was going to be Jake Heaps. But this year it was not so obvious. And so, especially with Jake Heaps returning, kind of surprising, but Montel Cozart has been named starting QB. What did you think of that news?
I thought it was pretty surprising that it happened this early, that it happened in April. And the fact of who it was, Charlie's pretty stubborn from what I've gathered. You know, he did bench Heaps at the end in favor of Cozart, but Cozart didn't really like blow the doors off anybody. So, you know, the fact that it happened this early is very surprising, but I think that it's for the best.
Yeah.
You know, we're establishing this is the type of team we want to be. We want to be this quick team, at least from the quarterback perspective, so we can design our offense and design our scheme around that specific type of skill. And that seems to be the best way for us to do it because we don't have those guys up front. So I think that it's a very objectively smart decision, but not really one that I expected
from our
boy Charlie.
No, I think it was the right choice. And I think everyone agrees it was the right choice. It's just kind of surprising that it happened so fast. And you know, I think part of it, there's probably, you know, several parts of this, but one, like you mentioned, that, you know, we're designing an offense that's going to be a little more up-tempo with John Reagan coming in, having some no-huddle aspects to it. And I think the Cozart probably matches that much more than, you know, than Heaps, who was kind of a stand up pocket passer and whatnot. And then the other thing, you know, it obviously gives you some continuity and maybe builds a little self-esteem for the quarterback and the rest of the team, knowing who we got. You know, this is our guy. We're going to roll with him. This is what we're going to do throughout the offseason. We know what we got, and we don't have to think about, you know, is Heaps going to be the guy? Is Cozart going to be the guy? Is Millweird going to be the guy? And so that's one thing. And then the third thing, which kind of came up more recently, is maybe he named it early to give Jake Heaps an opportunity to transfer, which we have heard news coming out here recently that he is going to transfer. But there really hasn't been confirmation locally yet, which is kind of interesting. But from what it sounds like, he's moving on, and I can't say that I blame him. What about you?
No, I mean, I wouldn't have necessarily expected it only because he has transferred once before.
Right.
I don't really know what the rules are. I don't know if he's graduated. So just mm-hmm. me not knowing that information, I wouldn't have expected it. But, you know, if he will graduate, he can, you know, immediately move to another Division I team, or maybe he moves to a championship subdivision team. You can kind of see that happening. You know, if he's not going to play in this type of fast offense, you know, if Cummings is more of a threat to be the number two than he is and not going to get to play, you know, is his loyalty really here? I mean, I'm sure he's got some friends here, but, you know, he's transferred once before. I'm not entirely surprised.
I think you're right. It might be interesting for him to move to an FCS team and be able to start early and maybe get a chance to succeed there. There has been some success of guys doing that and then moving on to an NFL career. So you never know. It might be something for him to do. I don't think that he was going to have a chance here, though. And I, you know, kind of feel bad for the guy. You know, him and Chris both. And you look at the pedigree of Weiss quarterback so far. You got Chris and Heaps and Turner Beatty and Millweird. All these guys coming in that were highly touted out of high school and really haven't had any success at all. And then the one guy that he recruits as a high schooler, Cozart, ends up being the starter and hopefully, you know, be good. But maybe we should look away from the whole 4 or 5 star quarterbacks that have moved on.
Oh, I thought you were going to say maybe we should just not have a quarterback. Maybe we should look away from quarterbacks.
Maybe,
you know,
we should do that.
We can't seem to get a good one. Maybe we just shouldn't have a quarterback.
You know, we are pretty progressive here on the Jayhawk Talk podcast when it comes to football design and football plays.
Oh, we're probably the best.
And so there might be something to that. You know, we really like fake punts. So maybe we put the punter back there and run a fake punt on every play until we actually have to punt.
Just, oh, okay.
What do you think of that? Like, so there's
it.
A chance.
I hate it, but... because I hate punting, because like punting's part of your scheme,
but it's a fake punt.
But you say until we have to punt,
right? Well, then you probably don't like what you do is sometimes you punt on like first down just to confuse them, and then when fourth down comes around, they're like, oh, they're gonna punt, but then you don't.
Okay, well, let's put our head on this. I don't think we've quite come
Not
together with this progressive offense.
Okay. That's fine.
I just hate designing anything based around a punt, Kevin.
Fair enough.
I hate punts.
Let's talk real quick about the spring game. This was the blue team versus the white team. Blue team, of course, is the starters. The white team is everybody else. And correct me if I'm wrong here. In fact, maybe you should tell the story about maybe we're going to like switch the scores or something.
So Charlie had made some kind of indication, at least on the television broadcast, about how you stick around for halftime. Don't change it at halftime because there's going to be a big surprise. So stick around. You know, he's kind of a hype man.
Right.
If you haven't figured that out, kind of a hype man. He's, you know, he could be a good corner guy for a wrestler. Great, great hype man. So he's hyping up this game. You know, stick around for halftime, guys. So anyway. First half happens, and the white team, the second string guys, is beating the blue team.
Right.
7-0.
By the way, it's like not only just the starters, but some of the two deep guys are on the blue team. Like, these are the reserves beating the starters.
The surprise that they had concocted, that they had come up with to try to get everybody to watch the second half, to get everybody... you know, into it, was that they were going to flip the scores between the white team and the blue team. And ideally, this would be the blue team was up 21-0, and now the blue team is down 21-0. But this doesn't work if the blue team is losing in the first half.
Yeah.
So they didn't get to do the surprise. Talk about one of your all-time backfires. I think that, I mean, I'm not sure a lot of people watch the spring game, but, you know, that's certainly what happened. But anyway, the blue team, in case you didn't watch it, in case you didn't hear the results, and you want to know, the blue team did come back to win 21-10. They did not flip the scores. But Cozart looked pretty good out there. He definitely looked like he earned that starting job, and he hadn't had it, or they hadn't declared it at that point.
Right.
He went 6-for-10, throwing the ball for 58 yards, and then added 70 yards rushing with two touchdowns on 7 carries. I think that that's going to be similar to what we're going to see down the road. A stat line like that. You know, not a whole lot of passing yards, a lot of running yards, and Cozart really, you know, taking the mantle in terms of driving the offense, just not necessarily with his arm.
And I'm okay with that so long as the percentage looks, you know, above 60%, like a 6-for-10. What I don't want to see is like 13 for 30 for, you know, 110 yards passing. Like that's not what we need. And the good news is I think that Reagan's offense is designed to get the ball out quick, get some quick hitters, spread everybody out, and allow the quarterback to extend plays and make some runs too, and some design runs and things like that. We saw them last year, his offense come in and run all over KU a little bit and did pretty good job. I mean, their quarterbacks were all pretty good, and you'd like to see Cozart develop into something like that. It will certainly be something we'll watch throughout the offseason. We'll be getting some reports, have some guests on to talk about some football stuff. But I do want to ask you, what are your expectations for this year?
I just want to see some improvement.
We say that every year. So
I know.
How about a win-loss expectation?
4 wins. I want 4 wins.
Okay.
I want 2 Big 12 wins.
Okay. So go 2-1 in the non-con, losing
to which is going to be really tough.
Probably losing to Duke. Who apparently is good at football now, and win 2 Big 12 games.
Yeah, I wouldn't be like, you know, dancing in the street because, you know, 4 wins is 4 wins, but that would be improvement for me.
No, that would be a market improvement. Like, I think 4 wins would be awesome, and that's what's kind of sad. But 4 or more wins would be good. I agree, I'm with you. 3 or less, you gotta not be too excited. And a lot of people have asked on Twitter, and I've been kind of avoiding talking about football for a while, but now that we're sort of getting here, is Weiss going to go after this year? Is Weiss going to not be around? What's it going to take for Weiss to be gone? And I don't think it matters. I think he'll be back another year regardless. That's just my opinion. If they go 0-for or win 1 game, maybe we're having this conversation, but they would owe him $5 million. I mean, that's quite a buyout. He signed a 5-year, $12.5 million contract, guaranteed the entire contract. So kind of like Turner Gill, if he leaves early, all that money is owed to him left on his contract. So, and we were only 2 years in. So we're going to see Weiss this year for sure in his third year. You say in the third and fourth years, you see what a coach is all about. We are there now, so we need to see some wins.
That's what I want to see. I just want to be able to go to a game and not leave in the second quarter and not if I leave in the second quarter, I'll feel bad about it because I haven't felt bad about it before.
Yeah, we have not made it back for several third quarters. And, you know, I think a lot of people are like, oh, you're bad fans. I'm like, well,
maybe we are. Maybe we are. But
you know, I bought the tickets. I'm a season ticket holder. I would love to sit in the seat the whole game, but if I'm losing by 40 points in the third quarter, it's kind of hard to sit there and take it, you know?
So maybe that's the expectation. Or that would be a successful season, is if they keep me in my seat, that will be what I'm looking forward to.
Well, I think Weiss has had a pretty good offseason for the most part. You know, they brought in an offensive coordinator, which everybody was kind of calling for. The transfers, some of them will be able to play now. You got Nick Harwell, who will be an interesting guy, who, by the way, is a great follow on Twitter. All he does is retweet pictures of, like, Hawaiian girls are tight. And then it's like a big picture of a Hawaiian girl that's on my timeline. And if I'm like at work, it's like, oh, we'll hide that now. Nick Harwell, go ahead and follow him. It was an ugly spring game, but, you know, it's, he did name the QB early. I think that's a good move. And there are some, you know, I think some real expectations this year. I think there's, I think people are now expecting to see some wins, or it will be considered a rough year. Even if it's improved and they lose by single digits, I don't think that's enough. I think we're ready to see some wins, and we will see what happens. Andrew, this offseason, you know, you and I have not been around for like a month on the old podcast waves.
We better do something to make it up to the folks.
Yep. So we are going to be doing this. We're going to try to do a podcast once a week. They may not be an hour long. They may be 30 minutes long. We might have guests on. We'll probably have several guests on throughout the offseason. We're going to try to get some really good guests to join us throughout the offseason, but keep it tuned in to the Jayhawk Talk podcast throughout the offseason. We will be bringing you some information, kind of a one-stop shop. You know, if you're not quite following the recruiting or not quite, you know, paying attention to the football team, hopefully we will be the guys to bring you some of that info and hopefully keep you somewhat entertained for 45 minutes as you're driving your car or whatever. So keep it on the Jayhawk Talk podcast. Andrew, do you have anything else before we get out of here?
It was still a great season for the basketball team. Despite what we said, I am looking forward to football season coming up. So good time to be a Jayhawk.
Yep, I think it is. I think you're right. And it's going to be a lot of fun next year in basketball as well. A great team returning, some really interesting guys coming in with Cliff and Kelly and potentially some others. So we'll pay attention to that. We will be back hopefully next week. We will check in with you then. As always, Rock Chalk. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering, nine times get the cheering with them banners held high, and the crowd going wild, night before the final four, you can't even sleep now, yeah we at the peak now, we can't even leap down, March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas
with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks,
this
baby.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
I want you to tell me what your favorite sprout is.
My favorite sprout? I like the green sprouts that come out of the ground and they put on to the sandwiches at Jimmy John's. When you get the number 5 turkey toms, those are delicious sprouts.
That's not what I was talking about.
What? Maybe. What are you talking about? You're talking about sprouts.
No. Sprouts. You know, like basketball.
Basketball. I've heard of this.